SiriusXM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We are on this Veterans Day honoring those who have served and particularly talking about veterans of color. My guests are Howard Lambert, president of the Freedom Foundation, and Dr. Paulette Hubbard. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She's also a Marine Corps veteran of 21 years. We are not taking any phone calls tonight, but I certainly encourage you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Before the break, I was talking about Mr. Lambert and some of the things that he's been doing to make sure that Black soldiers are honored, are remembered, are revered. And as I was kind of looking at your information, yes, it is my understanding that you are a bit of a movie star, Mr. Lambert. you have you were an extra in both Glory, the movie Glory, and Lincoln. How did that? I need to hear that story. I need to hear those stories.
Well, the credit's really due to my fellow reenactors. Going back to Glory, my formal background, by the way, is in communications, radio, television, and film. And so for me, it was an opportunity of a lifetime to, one, to study in the classroom, but also be a part of a feature film. And up to that point, when Glory was being produced and became a reality, I'm sure many of your listeners probably remember back in the, I guess, the 70s, when you had a lot of miniseries on television, more specifically The Blue and the Gray and the North and the South, and at which point, I challenge anyone to remember any person of color in any one of those miniseries. We've been on for, what, 4 or 5 days. And so when I found out that they were recruiting people in the Washington, D.C. area to be a part of a movie that would feature the 54th Massachusetts, then I knew I had to be a part of that. And so I just happened to be reading one of the local papers. And there was an article about the anniversary of Antietam and that the gentleman who lived in this area was pulling together a group of folks to be in this feature film. Which caught my attention. I mean, we're talking feature film, not just a made-for-television movie about the famous 54th Massachusetts. And so I made some contacts with folks, and next thing I know, we were recruited and trained down at Anacostia Park on the weekends to be a part of this film in 1989. I think it was released. And so that's how I got involved in Glory. And this was certainly a labor of love to be a part of it, even though it was long days. But it was certainly something that was exciting. And you never know quite, for those who've been in movies, never quite sure how it's going to turn out once they finish editing the music and stuff like that. But it exceeded all expectations. And up to that point, there had never been anything that I'm aware of that focused on the United States College troops during the Civil War. And it was the first movie to do that. And up to that point in time, I think there was only one reenactment group in the whole country, and that was the 4th United States College troops out of Baltimore. And after Glory, then a number of them came to being around the country, including Boston, Atlanta, down in Dallas, and I think there was a group in Chicago that came to being as well. So groups started to pop up all around the corner dedicating to tell the story of United States College Troops. And Laura was certainly, I'm very proud of, and my participation in that, met some great folks. And as you all know, a lot of the actors went on to do some great things, including Morgan and Danzel and Andre Brocker, and a number of folks got to get started, really, to a great extent. And
so what did they have you doing down there in Anacostia Park? I mean, tell the tale.
Well, we had to learn the drill. You know, we were soldiers, and what do soldiers do? They drill, and they drill some more. And that's what we did. We were more like, not just being extras, we were technical experts in the movie. So they needed people who knew the manual of arms, how to carry a weapon, how to use it, how to march and stuff like that. So we were the ones that really were more the technical scene that you saw in the movie. Because they needed people who knew, you know, what the commands were and that type of thing. And so we spent a lot of time on set into the late night filming down in a place called Jekyll Island, Georgia, which is where it was filmed, at St. Andrews Beach. And so at Anacostia Park, that's where we've been spending most of the time drilling. We recruited guys from all over the DMV. I mean, folks came from Maryland, Virginia. I'm from Virginia, but a lot of folks from D.C. and Maryland. It was great to see the guys come together, and they were from all walks of life. We had a little bit of everything, you know, government workers and doctors and lawyers and just a true mixture of folks. And, you know, we were there for the ultimate purpose of telling the story of not just the 54th Massachusetts, but the color soldiers on Civil War. And I'm telling you, everybody was just passionate about it because it wasn't for the payoffs. It wasn't for any potential notoriety or acclaim, because we felt that need to be story be told. And so a lot of guys who were there were people who had a passion for it and wanted to tell a story. And after the movie, you know, we stayed together collectively, which a lot of groups didn't. And we continued to do living history events all throughout the Washington metropolitan area. We went up to Boston, and we just traveled around the country telling that story. And even today, we're still together. The company would be the 54th Massachusetts. We're based out of the Washington, D.C. area, and we're still going strong telling the story.
Wow.
Wow.
I can't imagine. So when you were drilling again, I mean, were you in uniform, or were you in your regular clothes at some point, or how did that work?
For the most part, we were in our regular clothes, and as we got more folks in, and it just grew weekend after week after weekend, so word got out, and the local media, thankful for them, they helped to get the story out that we were drilling at Anacostia Park, and so when more guys joined up to be a part of that. And as we were joined up, we were able to get uniforms and the weapons, because it wasn't cheap for a lot of folks, you know, who weren't out of means necessarily at that time. So we helped out each other to buy the different accoutrement that we needed, the guns and the different haversacks and things like that, which would be a true soldier, what they would have had in those days. And so we had reproductions of the weapons, and obviously the uniforms were pretty much what the men wore in those days. So it took some time, but to answer your question, we did drill in uniform about several months before we headed off down to a place called Lusty, Florida, which is where some of the filming had taken place on the filming of the movie.
And you were also in the movie Lincoln.
Lincoln was a very interesting experience because, as you all know, I'm sure you guys know, it was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
And so that was filmed down in Richmond, Virginia, and that was interesting. Scout story was going to be told, because often as an extra, you're not privy to the script and how the ending and that type of thing. But that was quite an experience. I was glad to be a part of that because, arguably, you know, more books have been written about the Civil War and Lincoln than just about anything else in America. And so how that story was going to be told, it was kind of interesting to see how it was going to end up on the silver screen. And so that was a pleasure being a part of it as well.
And what role did you play, and how did you become... I can't believe that this man is so modest in his representation of this, you know, in this story. Please share with us, Mr. Lambert.
Well, Lincoln was interesting because I was not cast as part of a group. I was cast as an individual,
mm-hmm.
So, which means I had to get my bio and my papers and audition like everybody else. And so that was pretty neat. And I was happy to have that opportunity. It almost didn't happen because I was overseas on vacation. And thought I missed my opportunity to be cast along with Daniel Day-Lewis and Sally Field and people that I've watched on the silver screen for many, many years. And the producer called me once I got back to the area, and he promised he'd keep the slot open for me. And he called me and said, I need you on set the next day. And I'd already gone through wardrobe and all that good stuff, and so I was prepared to be a part of that. And when the casting called the next day, he called me on set. And they said, I know, still in the spirit, well, it's the power, it's what I want you to do. And so I had a close-up with Sally Field and Daniel Day-Lewis and Emily Jones. So it was quite a memorable experience at the White House, which is in the Governor's Mansion in Richmond, Virginia.
And so what character did you play?
I played one of the servants at the White House reception, pretty significant, and that had to do with the Anti-Deficiency Act, which a lot of people who work in the government know what that's all about, in terms of you can't spend money before it's appropriate by the Congress. And so that was a scene that was very pivotal in the movie in terms of Sally Jones and Sally Field, excuse me, and some of the other actors involving that scene about her spending money to renovate the White House and not having the money appropriated by Congress. The reason I mention that because my professional background now is more of a contracting officer in the government. And so it's near and dear to my heart, the Anti-Deficiency Act.
So back to, you know, the role that you played in Glory, even as an extra, and to the point and the very foundational effort of what you're doing now with the, you know, with the Freedom Foundation, I think this goes to the very heart of of what you're doing in recognizing these soldiers who were killed in 1864. How does that make you feel knowing that in one sense or another, your representation in the movie Glory, what you're doing now with the foundation, all of this is so symbolic and it's coming full circle.
Absolutely. It just strikes me every day how it's evolved over the last several years. In many ways, it's this natural evolution of a process. You know, it's one thing to put on the uniform and to be on the silver screen and go to the many colleges and universities I've done, as well as schools in this area over the last 10 years or so. But it's another thing to put up a lasting memorial to these men for generations to come.
Yeah.
To be able to tell that story for your children and my children, everybody else out there, so they will never forget the story of the United States Colored Troops, not just during the Civil War, but for the years to come, because of their service and their sacrifice. It's all part of the fabric of America, and that story needs to be told. It should never be forgotten.
So, you know, now, you know, Dr. Hubbard, both you and I are going to have to pull up both Lincoln and Glory and look for Mr. Lambert.
Right, and see if we can find him. So I can say, I know him. Well, I've met him. I won't say, I've met him. I know who he is. So,
yeah, exactly. And the movie, again, will have even more significance than before.
Absolutely.
But speaking of full circle, and I mentioned this, you know, before, you know, it's one thing to honor veterans for their service. It is another thing to honor veterans by serving them, which I think is a lot of what you are doing now in your second professional life. Talk yes. to me about what you're doing regarding mental health and veterans.
A couple of things. As a licensed clinical social worker, I am in private practice here in Virginia, and 75% of my client caseload are veterans. I love working with them because that rapport is already there. What breaks my heart in working with veterans are the mental health challenges that they face. That they often sometimes don't even know how to label it or what to call it. So when they're struggling with PTSD and depression and anxiety and adjustment disorders and so forth as a result of serving, especially those that have served in combat areas, and then the stigma that goes along with serving in the military when you're serving, it's almost taboo. The military is getting better about addressing mental health and an increase in mental health awareness. But there was a time, especially when I initially went in, you didn't talk about weakness and mental health challenges. You just grinned and bared it. And so I often get clients that have been struggling with mental health challenges for years, and it finally gets to the point where they just can't deal with it anymore, so they seek out services. So 75% of my mental health practice is that. And as a result of my practice with veterans, what I also noticed was a trend with female veterans. As serving in any branch of the service can be challenging because, one, you have to keep up. There are no concessions made for females when you serve. So mentally, physically, spiritually, you still have to be on board. And my male counterpart may have to only show up 100% for us, whether it's real or imagined pressure, we have to be 200%. We have to always be on 200% to make sure that we are fitting in with our culture and with our male colleagues. What I've noticed with a trend for females is that they are experiencing difficulties from things that have happened. You know, military sexual assault is not a secret. Sexual harassment, sometimes being ostracized or marginalized, or sometimes just discounted or dismissed because you're a female without even being given the opportunity to prove yourself or having to always be on 200 to prove yourself. Those those type of things have lasting effects. And so I've seen a trend in my practice with female veterans really struggling to adjust with moving beyond those toxic challenges that came while they were serving, which is why I've also started, actually my retreats will start in March 2022. The name of my retreats are Warrior and Her Truth. And I will be providing it's a 6-week online program that will culminate into a 4-day mansion retreat where I will bring veteran women together to help them move past those challenges and those nuances that they don't quite know what to deal with even after they've hung up the uniform. So those are some of the ways that I'm giving back and working with my brothers and sisters in arms to make sure that mental health-wise, they are also functioning at a level where they transition back into civilian life and they're able to continue to thrive as they live out their life.
In talking to them, even as it relates to mental health issues, on days like Veterans Day, do they talk about feeling honored or not honored on Veterans Day? Do they feel about being forgotten or not forgotten by civilians?
Some do, and it depends on, it's really individualized. It really depends on the person and what their experiences were. But what I can appreciate is that as a country, we've really gone out of our way to make sure that we honor veterans on Veterans Day. Like today, I can go to a number of restaurants and get a free meal because I'm a veteran. You know, there's a lot of stores and retailers provide military discounts because you served. And there are a lot of other agencies and companies that provide veteran services that the civilians that haven't served can't get. So specifically for Veterans Day, it really depends on the individual, but the majority that I talk to do feel like their Veterans Day has been put aside and they really are being honored for their service that they and the sacrifices that they made while they served.
Mm. When have you, is this, as far as your practice, is this something that you've always done or was this something that was a process once you began your practice that you pivoted to? I mean, did you always want to work with veterans?
So in the Marine Corps, they no longer have substance abuse counselors, but they used to have substance abuse counselors, and I went through that training. So that was my introduction to mental health, being a mental health counselor and working with substance abusers. And then I transitioned from the Marine Corps into private practice. I actually worked for the Marine Corps as a civilian for a number of years over their family advocacy and general counseling program. And I eventually transitioned into private practice because I wanted to do more to serve as I saw the challenges and the unique situations and lack of cultural competency with a lot of my civilian counterparts that are therapists. I really felt a need to come back into private practice and be able to at least be of service to those that I can reach to help them transition into a better life and a better way of living. Mm. The cultural competency amongst therapists is really a challenge in them understanding the military culture and how that influences how that that service member may be reacting to adjusting to civilian life. And it's really lacking in a lot of different areas. A lot of states have done better about insisting that and providing training for therapists to learn the military culture, but there's still a lot lacking in a lot of different areas.
Hmm. For you, Mr. Lambert, as you know, we recently lost one of the most high profile military men, in American history. General Colin Powell, a statesman, a soldier, and so much more. From a historical perspective, what do you believe that he represents as a soldier in American history? Because some would argue we may never see the likes of him again.
Without question, he was a trailblazer and a giant in my eyes. I had the pleasure of meeting him, and it's just amazing what he was able to accomplish, not just militarily, but on so many different levels during the course of his life. And so we honored him at our dedication back on the 6th. We did a moment of silence for him. He was a stranger to our organization. When we did the dedication of the monument at 10th and U Street, he was there. We were in Boston for the dedication at the Shaw Relief. He was there. He was a giant. And certainly what he did for the modern military, not just for African-American folks, but also in terms of the trailblazer for many other folks who came behind him. As you know, a lot of people who were later generals today owe a great deal to his accomplishment and his sacrifice to get to that point. So he was definitely a giant among of men in many respects. And his story is the American story. You know, an immigrant who came here, got his education, served this country, and never forgot where he came from. And so we hold him in the highest esteem. He meant a lot to our organization and, I would say, to the military in general. And not just the military, but certainly, I think, for many of your audience out there as a role model, what's possible in this country.
Yeah. And I think, again, we look at not just those veterans that are no longer with us, but also those veterans that are still with us, that have served and are still, representing in high positions, such as the Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, for example, now still serving the country, but in a civilian capacity. But again, was a high-ranking general before his appointment to that. And so, so I look at when you're talking about veterans of color, there are still so many fantastic standouts. And I think with social media and to the point that you were making earlier, Dr. Hubbard, if you even if you go, you don't have to go very far, but just on TikTok, and I'm not talking about the silly stuff, but you will see so many great representations of women in the service who are well represented. I've seen a lot of women in the Army and in the Marine Corps who are, if you'll allow me, worth their stripes, and really kind of standing tall. And my father, for example, who was 84, he was an Army captain, and his father served in the European theater in World War II. My mother's father served in the Pacific theater. He was a cook in World War II. And, I come from the military family. They often joke with me because they say they don't know what happened to me because I decided not to go into the military, but I guess I still turned out okay. But, I think that there really needs to be a true recognition, particularly in communities of color, to continue to honor, those who are serving, and to understand, the full measure of sacrifice. And I think this is particularly the case considering what happened this summer, in Afghanistan, because that situation is out of the headlines. But the truth of the matter is, and you know this better than I do, Dr. Hubbard, that your plate could even become even more full. And the counselors and psychologists and the psychiatrists within, the bond of military and outside are going to have their work cut out for them as many of these members of the service, you know, move out and will need more mental health services coming out of Afghanistan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It is going to be a challenge to make sure that everyone is served to the extent that they need services.
Yeah. I think it is going to be a huge challenge, not just for those in private practice, but for the VA and the like. And I think it's going to require the government to have to step up. In these final minutes, I would like to go back to you, Mr. Lambert. There is a monument, and there was a ceremony that dealt with, I'll let you explain it. What is the Matinsville Historic Site?
Correct. It's the
Tell me about that.
Historic Site, and it's down in Culpeper, Virginia, which is not far from the Washington, D.C. area. And the dedication was last November the 6th. And it's really dedicated to faith, courage, and self-determination. Now, those three things come together because there's a historical marker there to the Madden's Tavern, which is run by a gentleman named Willis Madden. In 1840, he started it, which is unheard of for men of color in a southern town to run his own tavern. But he did that. It's well respected. It's dedicated to faith. The Ebenezer Baptist Church is right across the way, and the Maddens were one of the founders of the church. And so in the African-American community, the spirituality and the faith has always been important to us. And last but not least, as we alluded to earlier in the program, there's a monument there to United States Colored Troops who were part of the 4th Division, 9th Corps of the Army of the Potomac in 1864. That was a premier army of the Union, and they were part of that. And they were part of what I call the beginning of the end, because it started in Culpeper and led to eventually Lee surrender in Appomattox. And those men were part of basically the end of the Confederacy as we now know it. And they played a vital role in that struggle, especially if you look at the Battle of Crater in Petersburg later that year. It wasn't so much that it was a Union victory, but those men were instrumental in moving forward the cause of freedom for the Union Army. Mm-hmm. And so that site's dedicated to the Willises, to the church, and also United States College who fought on the Civil War. The story is not just about that physical location, though. It's about, the things that we hold near and dear in terms of human struggle, and that being courage and faith, and to be able to determine your fate in life by doing what you know is right, and those men did that.
Yeah.
And so it's more about, the struggle and the culture going forward than just about the physical location of the site. But I encourage all your listeners to go there and at least take it in.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Howard Lambert, Dr. Paulette Hubbard, for sharing with us. I really appreciate your time, and happy Veterans Day, Dr. Hubbard, and good work for you, Mr. Lambert. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, November 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.